If you read the Chumash, and then you read Rashi, Rashi quotes the Medrash, and often it's very difficult to understand what the Medrash is talking about, or how it fits into the plain meaning of the Pasuk. So I just happened to take it up, and we worked out an area. And somebody suggested that I give it over today. So I was considering different areas to give over.
$1,000.
Pasuk Zion. We'll start at this point. And this is after the encounter between Moshe and God at Sinai, and
Moshe finally has no choice but to accept the
mission. He doesn't want to accept it, and then he returns to Mitzrayim. Then you have that incident where all of a sudden he's in danger of being killed, and because he had carried with regard to circumcising the son, and before circumcised the son, and he saved, then destroyed the seed. On 27, and God said to Aaron, go out to meet Moshe in the wilderness. And he went out, and he met him in the mountain of God, Har Sinai, and he kissed him. And Moshe told Aaron all the words of God that he had sent him concerning the mission, and all of the signs, the wonders, that God commanded him to perform. So Moshe and Aaron went, and they gathered all the elders of Israel. And Aaron spoke all the words that God had said to Moshe. And he performed the signs to the eyes of the people. What signs are being referred to over here? Anybody? These signs, specifically the matzah, the turning into a snake, the leprosy, putting his hand inside of his cloak, and the leprosy sign. And there was a third sign. God said, if they don't listen to the first two, now the water, turning water into blood. Those were the three signs that were directed for the Jews. That was not for Pharaoh. Okay? So what is he saying now? This is what I want to concentrate on. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Vayame Ha'am. Very important statement. We're going to already discuss this. And the people believe. They believe. Vayishma, when they heard, he spoke out of Hashem as Bnei Yisrael, that God had remembered the Jews, and that he had seen their affliction, and they kneeled and bowed. Now I want to focus on the word Vayame Ha'am, and the people believe. Very important idea over here. I mean, I believe there's an important idea over here. So there's a statement of the Chazal. Yeah. So Chazal say like this. I'm going to read you the statement. And you know my method. My objective is not just to teach Chumash, but to try and teach you the method of going beyond the statement to a deeper meaning. You tell me what's the problem. In other words, what I always tell with my students, you read the Rashi, or you read the Chazal, and you have to discover the question, to frame the question. Everything begins with a question. That's the methodology of the Torah study. And even if you can't answer the question. Now, you have this, I'm using the Torah Tamima. The Torah Tamima basically brings down the, you also use the Torah Tamima, it's a very good Jewish, but it brings down the statements of the Chazal, of the Gemara, usually. And then there's a little explanation on the bottom. Vayame Na'am, no, it's just like this. Mikan to Yisroel, Ma'aminim Hem. What does that mean? Anybody want to translate? Mikan, we see from here that the Jews are believers. That's the statement. Now, when I read the statement, it bothered me. There's something in the statement that bothered me. Now, I want to know if you have the same reaction, or if you have any reaction. What would you say? No, that's not what the statement is saying.
How
doesn't say
it.
How does it prove that they're believers? Well, okay. How does it prove they're believers? Well, that makes sense. Because that's what it's saying, they believe. They throw the signs and they believe. Thus we see that they are believers. So that's not a problem. But what is the statement problematical? Is there a problem with the statement? Do you have a problem with the statement, Jackie? My problem is, What is this teaching us that they're believers? It's what the Pesach is saying. They believe. What is the Chazal coming to add? What is it telling us about the Jews? Obviously, when Chazal make a statement, they're trying to add something, right? To enhance our understanding of the Pesach. So aren't they simply telling us what the Pesach is saying? The Pesach is saying they believe. So they believe. They're believers. I mean, what's the big deal? Well, what are they telling us about? In other words, the Torah is telling us that Moshe and Aaron came and they performed these convincing signs because of the signs that they believed, that's for sure. Because if they believed without the signs, then there would have been no need for the signs, and that certainly would have been something the Torah would have pointed out, they believed without the signs. So it's clear that they needed signs. And they were given signs, and these signs made sense, and they accepted them. So what do we see that they're believers? Of course. That's my question. My question is that this Chazal is just repeating the obvious. It's just repeating what the story is telling us. It's not adding anything to our understanding. That's my question. What is it trying to convey to us? What is it telling us when it simply is obvious? Of course they're believers. That's what the public is telling you. They believe. So if they believe, they believe. It's a restatement. Exactly. My problem is that there simply seems to be a restatement of what the Torah is saying. It doesn't add anything. Chazal is supposed to add something, go beyond the surface, and tell me something. Tell me something. What are you telling me? I know they believe. They're believing. They believe. Right? We all understand each other this time. We all understand each other. If you're going to tell me that it's telling us that they believe in some other situation, well, that's what situation are they talking about? It's not apparent from the Chazal. And if you're going to tell me that they believe in this situation, so I know that's from the Pesach. That's the Pesach. What is it telling me? It's trying to convey some idea. I sense that there's some idea over here that it's trying to convey. And that's what intrigues me. Because I'm intrigued by these kind of Chazal. Because everything that Chazal said was based upon some insight, some deep insight. And when they say something which seems to be superficial, not even superficial, but superfluous, so then it bothers me, it attracted me. Alright? Now, just don't have to answer it. I want to use this as a jump-off point for analyzing something else which is very related and which bothers me very much. Take up, now we're going to go through the whole dialogue between God and Moshe. That's too much for one year. Okay? But, the basic theme of the dialogue is Moshe's resistance. Moshe does not want the mission, that's pretty clear. So he asks all kinds of questions and raises all kinds of obstacles, and finally he displeases with God, send somebody else, please, after he runs out of objections. But if you take a look, you'll see, after he gets through the preliminary, who am I that I should take them, and by what merit, and God answers that I'll be with you, and the merit of Sinai, and so forth, then in Pesach Gimel, this is Perek 3, Pesach 13. Gimel your Gimel. So Moshe then says, okay, I'm going to go to the Jews. And say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they will ask me, what is his name? What shall I tell? So he asks, by what name shall I say that you spoke to me? Then God says the famous, Eki Asher Eki. I am, literally, I guess, I am, or that I am. Whatever. Yeah, okay. We're not going to go into that. That's a very metaphysical notion behind that name. And then, Kosomar Ekyes Lachani. And then, again, in 15, God adds to the name. And that is the God of your fathers. I'm God of Avram, God of Yitzchak, and God of Yaakov. Because God only associates his name with three people. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Okay? So one is the philosophical name of God, the philosophical name. And then there's because we know God, the God of nature, from our study of nature leads us to an awareness of God, and then God's mystery, that God relates to us in the course of history, and that's Abba Mishniyata. Fine. And then he commands them to gather the elders of Israel and so forth, and tell them that God has appeared, and yet God is going to take you out of Egypt and bring you to the land of the Canaan, etc. And they will listen to your voice. And then they'll all go to Paro. And then you'll tell Paro that he should let you go to worship God in the Midbar. And so forth. And Paro will resist. the whole thing. And God then describes in the whole course of what's going to occur until it culminates in the end. Now, take a look at Dalet, that's chapter 4. After this part of the dialogue, so what does it say? And Moshe answered and said, "Tehein lo yaminu li, they will not believe me. Lo yishma v'koli, they will not listen to my voice. For they will say that God does not appear to you." Okay? Now, God said to him, "What is in your hand?" And he said, "A staff." And then God said, "Cast it to the ground," and he cast it to the ground, and it became a snake. And Moshe ran away. And God said to Moshe, "Stretch out your hand and grab onto its tail." And Moshe did so, and it became a staff. In order that they believe that God, the God of your fathers, appeared to you, God of Abraham and Yaakov. Then he said further, "Put your hand inside of your bosom." And he did so. And he removed it, and it was smitten, and he had sarah, leprosy, so to speak. Then he said, "Put your hand in again," and he did so, and again, when he removed it, it was cured. And it'll be if they do not listen, they don't believe you, and they don't listen to the voice of the first oath, then they'll listen to the second one. And if they don't listen to both of these, then take from the waters of the river and pour it on the ground, and the water will become blood. All right? Now, on the surface it would seem that Moses' question was quite legitimate. They won't believe me. And God responded in kind. Yet you know that that this story is moving on two different levels. On the level of the surface, but then there's a subterranean level, according to Chazal, quoted by Rashi, in which it's not by accident that God chooses these particulars, at least the first two. The first time, it says the kol va'os, there's a message. It's not just a demonstration that God can change nature, that God has control over nature, but there is a demonstration intended. What is the demonstration? The demonstration is, according to Chazal, that Moshe was involved in washing her. That Moshe was involved in washing her. Because Moshe said that they will not believe. They ain't no yaminoi. On day Mazeb Yodecha, so Rashi says, the Medrash, Mizeb Yodecha, from that which is in your hand. Atachai Lukos, you are deserving of punishment. Shechashar to the Serum, that you, that's a very serious time. Yechoshe, to suspect people who are trustworthy. Serum, Kasher. You Yechoshe, the Jews, they wouldn't believe. Then in the next one, Vahil and Achash, and it became a snake. So Rashi says, Ramazlo, God alluded, hinted him, Shechipa Lashon Hara Yisrael. He spoke Lashon Hara. He slammed the Jews. When he said Lo Yaminu Li, he said it openly, Lo Yaminu Li, the Tavas of Nasa Shal Machash, and he sees the art, so to speak, of the snake. The snake, right? This is the right. Adam and Chava, the snake. That's the umness of the snake is to. Well, why is it compared to the snake? Let me just pause on that for a moment. Now in the second one. Mitzorah Kasheleg, that's on Vav now. When he puts his hand in and he takes it out and it has Torah, we'll translate that as leprosy. Okay? So Rashi says, also in this sign, God hinted to him that he spoke Lashon Hara when he said Lo Yaminu Li. Therefore he was smitten with Torah. As Miriam, the case of the famous case of Miriam at the end of what Pasha? Pasha's Balosa. And she spoke Lashon Hara too. She spoke Lashon Hara about who? About Moshe Rabbeinu. And we discussed it this morning. As I will say, that's why the story of the Moraglim is juxtaposed to the story of Miriam, because they didn't learn. She spoke Lashon Hara. She did so out of pure motive. She had no intention to humiliate Moshe to speak badly. She thought he had made a mistake. And in spite of that, she was smitten with Torah to show you how serious Lashon Hara is. And these spies, they didn't learn a lesson. Okay. So it's very interesting. Now, Rashi Rashi means that this is not just by accident. The reason why God selected this, God could have selected many different types of miracles, but there was a message and a punishment to Moshe. But it's interesting, because what is problematical about this whole thing? You see how the Torah has to be learned on different levels. There's the overt level, then there's the covert, or the subterranean level. In the subterranean level, it's a totally different world. There's going on over there. There's only one problem, though. There's one major problem that I've always had with this story. Now, what's the problem? What's wrong about this is, was Moshe really guilty of lusting or not? I'm not so convinced that he was. What did Moshe do wrong? They won't believe him. That's right. And wasn't he very justified with that? In other words, one second. Yeah, but he was saying like this. Let's put ourselves in Moshe's position for a minute, and let's see whether his question was justified. At that point in time, if Moshe was wrong, and there was no reason at all to assume that the Jews would not believe him, and he should have had faith that the Jews would believe him, so then God should not have given him his time. But there was either there was an object of necessity for these signs, or there was not. Okay? Now, since we see that God, in fact, did give him these signs, we must assume that there was an object of necessity for them, otherwise he couldn't receive his permission. So there was some most of things that were incorrect at each time. Now, to summarize the way the Rambam in the Morning of Ochim understands the story, it's very interesting. It follows the way Moshe established himself as a prophet in the eyes of the Jews is more or less in line with the way any prophet, because they're prophets, they're promotion, and they have their laws on how do we know if someone's a genuine prophet or not, which would be applicable at any time in the day if someone was playing prophecy. So according to the Rambam, it's basically two after the Torah was given. A, the individual has to be at a level of prophecy, which means he has to be a highly professional individual, outstanding in terms of knowledge of all of Torah, but not just Torah, but he has to be a master of all the sciences and all the knowledge, and a perfected individual, morally and ethically, to the nth degree. So any flawed individual, we don't even listen to him no matter what miracles he performs. If he passes that test, and he establishes himself as a person who's worthy of prophecy, we still don't know, so he's worthy. It doesn't mean that God actually gave him a message, that God actually gave him a prophecy. Now, according to the Rambam, he doesn't have to perform miracles. After the Torah was given, he didn't have to perform miracles, but he's tested by predicting the future. He predicts a series of future events which are beyond anybody, there's no way anybody could know. And not only must they come true, but they must come true to the last detail. If there's one slight detail, he could predict a catastrophe that's going to happen 2 years from now on a ship or whatever the case, which no one could know. I mean, who is going to be on it and what they're going to be wearing, and everything should come out 100% except one person's shoelace is not the way he said it, and he'd be disqualified. It would have to be 100%. In this case, with Moshe has performed signs because he's before the Torah was given. Alright? So if you see the first thing is, Moshe said, when I come to them, the first thing is they're going to ask me for your name, which makes sense because they'll want to know, who is this guy? Is he talking in the name of the true God? The name represents the concept of God, the concept of God that we have. Everybody believes in God. All the nations have a God. So first we're going to test him out. He could be an idolater. He could be a mishrimah. He could be speaking in the name of a different God. So this name, by the way, this name was given over to the elders, and it represents concepts, the advanced metaphysical concepts that were handed down from Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. So that would establish the fact that an individual who has a true understanding of God, that we can say, before we even ask for miracles. Because if he can't pass the test on the names of God, so what it means he's not an individual who's on the level of prophecy at the beginning. That's the first thing. But God gave him the names of which, by which I am to be known. Ekyah. And I say Ekyah because that's the name, like Elohim. And Elohim. Then Moshe says, so I know the name. The fact that I know the name in no way proves that God has spoken to me, because they also know the name. So I could have gotten the information from my association with certain scholars. I mean, that doesn't prove anything. The fact that will prove that he's a high level individual with a tremendous chacham, who has a tremendous wisdom and understanding. But that doesn't mean that God communicates his message. He can still be a charlatan. So therefore I have to prove to them that God has spoken to me. And the only way to do so is through Oso, is through the performance of miracles. So that would be concluded proof. And now, that's what he said. The Haynes, after God told him the name, his very next objection was, they will not believe in me, because they will say that God, because they'll say God didn't appear. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's not knocking the Jews. The Jews would be justified in not believing him at that point. If he would have gone to the Jews, let's imagine, if he would have gone to the Jews, and all he had was the name of God, but he did not have any signs and wonders, should the Jews have believed him that God spoke to him? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It would be absurd for the Jews. Why should they believe? The Torah does not expect us to believe something which doesn't make sense or which hasn't been proven. As we see from my terms, the whole introduction to Har Sinai. God said, I'm going to come to you, gather the entire nation, I'm going to come to you in a thick cloud with the thunder and lightning, and they're going to hear, the whole nation will hear. Because Bavur Yishma, in order that they listen when I speak, they'll believe in me and they'll believe that you're my servant. So you see that God did not expect the Jews to accept the Torah without a clear demonstration that this is Menashe Malim. It therefore seems to me that Moshe Rabbeinu was quite justified in his statement. They won't believe me, not because there's anything wrong with them, but because why should they believe me? I don't have any proof. All they've given me is the name. They know the name as well. The fact that one has the name is not sufficient. So therefore, basically means I need signs, I need miracles. Now, I ask you, was he justified or wasn't he justified? It would seem that he was, because God didn't rebuke him. If he's wrong, God should have rebuked him, and God should have said, that's watching her, and it should have been on the overt level. It seems like you'll be the first one, the first act. Contrast this with the case of Miriam. The case of Miriam, there's no doubt. The idea that Miriam spoke less than her is not something which is alluded to through Chazal. It's not that she spoke less than her. She stood with Sarah. And the God rebuked her. How dare you speak about Moshe? Why would Madua lo yireisim without Moshe? Lo chenati Moshe. How did you not fear to speak about Moshe? So that's on the overt level. And she's smitten with a real Sarah. She's looking at a funny kind of Sarah. Isn't it? Because I'll ask you again what we say, Mamonoshah. You hear the expression Mamonoshah? Yeah, more one to make up your mind. If he spoke once in Arab, he should have gotten a real Torah. This is like a mini Torah. It's sort of like a remez, a hint. What's the hint? So the whole thing really is problematical, because if he spoke once in Arab, well, first of all, you're going to have to convince me where was the lesson in Arab. I don't see anything wrong with what he said, and God agrees with him. God doesn't say a word, God should be right. Sign one, sign two, and it's not only that, but it's sign one and sign two, or I can get sign three. So that indicates that Moses is correct. And on the other hand, God, on the subterranean level, he's a Malkin. He's one who sees a slanderer, speaking less than her, and the snake is because he's acting like a snake, and he's being treated like a lowlife, and he's getting terrified. So the thing just doesn't make sense. The thing just does not make sense. And I stick with the question, where was the Lashon Hara of Moshe? Because in my opinion, Moshe was 100% correct. He had every right to expect that the Jews would not believe, and there was a need, an objective need, for the Oso. That's my question, and as I said, you're the first. It's a good point you made, but Moshe over here, if you want to say that when Moshe did Nehemiah on Eli, he was denying what God said, that they will listen to your voice, then his sin would not have been a sin of lust in her, but a sin would have been a fear in God. And Chazal are not saying that. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But your point is, why don't we hurl a more serious charge against him, that is fear? And the answer is because one could say that, yeah, God told him the end result, but he, as the individual, has to carry it out. He needs to know, how am I going to do it? I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I'm only saying at this point in time, after I've given the name, they won't believe me at this point. I need more. He's only asking for more. He's not denying that what God said is true. Yeah. Okay, just hold on to that for a while. Anyway, you'll have to agree, though, that if that is a sin, that's not what they're saying. That's not loving God. That's something else. Okay. Yeah. You don't have to turn back, but if you remember at the beginning, you see what happens is that it's interesting. There's a continuity. Of course, here God gives them these signs, and they go back to Mitzrayim, and he performs these signs in front of them. And what does he say? Vayyam Einam. The people believe. Almost as though it's sort of a rejoinder. Moses said, Vehein lo yaminu li, and the Torah is saying, Vayyam Einam. They believe. You're wrong, right? The Gemara, I'll quote the Gemara in a few minutes. The Gemara brings the two together. He says, in 1 second, you're wrong, Moses. You'll see. Now, my question was, Chazal said, and the people believe, Mikan, we see from here, that they're believers. And it seems to be that the statement doesn't add anything. The answer is no. It does add. It's a very profound point. Very profound point. And I'll see if we can bear with me. There's 1 second. What the Torah is telling you, you see, what's difficult for us is, if I were to demonstrate, let's say I were to tell you, let's say you're basically a group of scientists over here, and I were to tell you that a certain chemical can cure a certain illness, which is new to you, right? And then I would, you say, well, what's the proof? And then you're all scientists, and I were to perform the proof. I break it down, I show you the whole idea, the whole proof, and it was clear beyond any doubt. And you accept it. And you accept it. Would we say, you see from this that they're believers? No. Yeah, that's not a believer. That's not a quality of the person. You're a logical individual. You're logical, and you accepted the proof, right? So that doesn't qualify you as being a believer. But what do you see from this? Well, Moshe came, on the surface of which seems to be more or less the same thing. Because Moshe came armed with ammunition. God did not send him out there without proof. He was armed with tremendous proof. He had the abstract knowledge. He had the ideas. He had the signs. It was, any rational person would have to accept it. But this qualifies them as a believer. Which means to say that in this area, the area of belief with regard to this area, in the existence of God, conviction in this area demands a perfection of the individual. It qualifies the person. It makes him into a believer. It's different. You see, it's different if a person accepts the truth in this area than if he accepts the truth in any other area. And that is because by nature a person is not a believer. The man by nature is not a believer because he has tremendous, in other words, it's different. The fact that when a person sees clear-cut proof, no matter what proof he sees about the fact that this world must be the result of the Creator and that there is a God and the Torah is true and so on and so forth, the fact if he accepts it, that indicates that he has a certain perfection. He has to overcome certain innate emotions. He has to deal with disbelief. Because this is an area which goes against his emotions. Every person within him has certain emotions of disbelief. It stems from the fact that, for many reasons, I mean, I'm not going to go into the world of psychological factors, but basically there's a tremendous amount of resistance. The resistance is because the person wants to live an instinctual life, and he doesn't want to accept the fact that this whole world is controlled by a God, and therefore he has to answer to a God, and his lowly place in the universe. I mean, it's tremendous ego. Whatever, ego, exactly. The ego, for example, tremendous. The fact, you see, when you have the world is broken up into two camps, the believers and non-believers, it's not the point that the non-believers are not rational. They can be great minds, great scientists. But it is a defect. They have not been able to overcome the defect of disbelief, which means to say that in this area their emotions are coming into the picture. And the emotions are based upon the fact that they have an emotion of freedom. That's why Chazal are telling you a tremendous thing. This is a uniqueness. The fact that a person does not believe in God is a defect in the God. It's not just the fact that somebody doesn't have a good mind. It's not the fact that he hasn't had proof. You see what I'm saying? I'm not talking about the case of a peanut, where we say someone who was raised and has no access to the knowledge. because there are many people that have access to the knowledge, and they will accept. In other areas, they will accept, they'll believe in scientific theories, but all kinds of theories. People that disbelieve, that don't believe in God, or don't believe in the Torah, what they ask them what they do believe in, and why they believe in it, they'll be the craziest things in the world. And the questions that they have on Torah are not really major questions, and they can be answered very well. But they, in that area, that is where their resistance is manifesting itself. You see? So in other words, in order for a person to be a mom and require students, it means that he has to be a thinker, he has to be logical, he has to study the situation. And the Torah contends that any individual who looks at all the factors, who studies the world, who studies nature, who studies history, who studies Torah, if that person is able to overcome his resistances, then he will naturally have to accept the imamim. If he fails to do so, it is not an intellectual failing, but it's a moral failing. You see what I'm saying? You understand the point? This is a different area. In other words, it is completely different, as I explained to you, a person who accepts a truth. If a person accepts something which is true in the realm of science, it is totally different than if he accepts the truth of the existence of God and Torah. That's totally different. This person is a perfected individual. He's a mommy. Why? Because in the world of science, it's totally indifferent. So therefore, it's just a question, do you have the proof or don't you have the proof, or is he intelligent enough to file the proof? So if he does, it's no milo. See? If a guy is a scientist and he accepts that a certain thing can cure cancer because he can prove it's no milo, it's not a profession. The guy means he's on the level. I mean, we don't know the science, so we can't accept it because we don't understand. Take your area, you'll understand, you'll accept it. I can't say the mammon, wow. Here they say, no. The fact of the matter is that it's not by accident that it's only one people that were capable of accepting the Torah and committing themselves to the Torah. And it's a mammon, which means to say, that the Jewish people has a certain moral and ethical perfection which expressed itself in the fact that they have a munah. A munah is more than just intellectual. It has to be intellectual. It's not blind faith. It means a person, the Torah believes that any person who is rational, who removes all of his biases and his fear, the emotion that gives up his disbelief, he has to overcome the disbelief. Everybody has within him a pocket of disbelief which he has to give up, and he studies the matter carefully, must be a mammon. But if not, if he's not a mammon, it's not because there's no proof, it's not because there's a lack of certainty, it's because he is suffering from a defect, it's a soul in the gavra. So that, now we can come back to the story over here. When God sent the Moshe to Mitzrayim, and God knew what was necessary to convince the people, and God did not expect the people to respond on blind faith. That would be ridiculous. Why should they believe that a total stranger, why should they believe it? He's a nut. Well, how do we know that this is true? God expects. Imagine what? He hadn't said what? He's killed a mystery. That was insufficient. Yeah. Right. One second. See, I contend that there was nothing wrong with the request for signs. On the overt level, that's why you see on the overt level, Moshe is basically making a request for signs, and God responds to that. But the way Moshe expressed it, the Hein lo yamin li, they will not believe in me. That statement has to be understood on two different levels. On the surface, he was saying, they won't believe me because I don't have proof. But God knew that he was saying something more. He was criticizing them. He said there's a problem with them too. They're not believers. Moshe was deprecating the Jews. The Hein lo yamin, they don't have the quality to be ma'aminim. They're lacking a certain quality. God knew that that's what he was saying. It wasn't an overt statement like Miriam had made. In other words, Moshe was not saying it consciously. If you ask Moshe Rabbeinu, do you mean to say that these people are... No, he's not saying that at all. But God who knows the deep thoughts, knew that he was saying more than that. It's not just an absence of proof, but these people are not our high-quality people. They don't have the quality of Amunah. And that's why, in terms of the story itself, since the question was a legitimate question, there was a legitimate need for signs, so therefore on the level of the story itself, God responds to him and gives him the signs. But since, in terms of Moshe's perspective, God wanted to point out to him that he does have certain feelings on a subconscious level. That is to say that he is not giving the Jews their due, he is degrading them or deprecating or criticizing them, he's putting them down on a level which is lashon hara. God indicated to him, because Moshe was extremely intelligent, he didn't need an overt. The nachash was a sign. The nachash was a sign to see Moshe ran away from him. It was a sign to Moshe to study. That's why it says makol ha'oth, to the voice. The oath has a message. There's a message in the miracle. And that message is that you are not giving the Jews their due. You have no right to level an accusation that they're not ma'aminim because you're saying they're not a perfected people. And the same is true with the Sarah. But he didn't deserve a full-fledged punishment because on the overt level, he didn't commit lashon hara. So this was a different kind of a punishment. It was simply God was a signal, a remez. It was a remez to be on God because you carry, you harbor within yourself an opinion of the Jews, which is a terrible thing. You're accusing them of having a blemish. What does the Gemara say? Take a look at the Gemara. One second. Take a look at the Gemara. I'll read the Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara says like this. The Gemara quotes the pasuk. The Heimlo Yaminu Li. Quotes Moshe said they will not believe in me. But Gal Yikame Kutcha Baruch Hu, and it's revealed it was known before God. The Mehemne Yisrael, that the Jews are believers. These are believers. Amalo. So God said to him, Heim Aminim, they are believers. The name Aminim, the children of believers. The Ata, and you, ain't Sof Chalahamim. Because you accuse them, in the end, you're going to be guilty of disbelief. Heim Aminim, they are believers. It says, Vayam Ein Aam, it says the people believe. So you see that they're believers. The name Aminim, that they are the sons of believers, because it says, anybody know the source? Where do we see there the children of believers? Their father was the Hem in Bashem. It says about Abraham, the Hem in Bashem, and he believed in God. So, and they're the children of Abraham. So they are believers, the children of believers. Let me ask you a question. If we want to establish the fact that they're believers, who cares if they're the children of believers? Why does the Torah make a point? I mean, poetically it's very nice. Because it's like Moshe is saying they're not believers. And God is saying they're believers. Children of believers. But who cares if they're children of believers? What's the point? It fits into what we're saying. Since, as we said, to be a believer is not just an intellectual quality, but it's a moral perception. So it's something which has to be cultivated. And the fact of the matter is that they are, you're saying that they're lacking this moral perception. They have this moral perception, and it comes from a whole tradition. I mean, in the name, I mean them. You're overlooking the whole thing. You're degrading the people. Not only are they Maminim, but they're B'nai Maminim. This is a quality that this people has. And it's been passed down. It's been perfected and brought to a higher level. Which only goes to show you that the quality of believing is based upon the fact that the individual is a Maminim. And to be a disbeliever is a soul, is a defect in the God. It's not a intellectual problem. If a person doesn't believe, it's not like in today's society, he just doesn't believe. He's not convinced. It's not an intellectual phenomenon. It is a very serious moral defect in the individual. That's exactly what the Chazal was saying. One little, when they said, Yitan Shi Yisrael Maminim, they're telling you in the nature of the Jew, that to be a believer requires that a person be perfected. Because in this area, they said, in this area, it's the area where all of his emotions of fear have come to the fore. So that in order to accept these ideas, it's not just that he studies, it's not just that he understands truth, that's not enough. It means that he's a perfected individual, that he lives his life and he subjugates all of his emotions in line with the true ideas, no matter how much they go against his own emotions. So that is the real, that's the real quality. That's the real quality of the of the Jew is to be a mommy. And just to be a, I just want to take it one step further, up to this point I agree. Maybe now it gets a little controversial. That is to say that you have to realize that just to accept, to have a genuine conviction in the existence of God and in the truth of Torah, that's a level of perfection that requires perfection. That's a mom. That's an intellectual process. But it goes, but the whole direction of a person's perfection is to be a mom in every area of Torah. Which means to say that he always has to be ready, because even when a person observes the Torah, but when it comes to areas that go against his emotions, then he has to raise up the mom in there. Then he has his rationalization. Or he has certain ideas that he likes to believe in. As we discussed, he may have certain types of superstitions that he tries to weave into the framework of Torah because they give him comfort. To that extent, he's going. In other words, to be a mammon means not just on the primary idea to accept Torah, but in your entire relationship to every area of Torah, you have to be a mammon. You have to be a mammon, which means that as you progress in Torah and as you learn new ideas, and these ideas go against your emotions, they may go against certain emotions that you have, both your non-religious emotions and your religious emotions. You have both sets of emotions. You're a mammon. Mammon means you're always prepared. You see, a lot of people don't change. They become religious, and their religiosity implies to them certain notions. You know, they feel very comfortable with certain senses, certain feelings, and they think they're very religious. And they think that the fact that they're religious doesn't mean it's Torah. And they don't learn anymore. They can't progress intellectually within the framework of Torah. And a lot of their beliefs are very primitive, very superstitious. But they're from. Or they could be in the other area. And I mean to say that the perfection, a true mammon, is one who is able to subscribe to the truth of Torah, no matter how it affects his emotions. Whether, as I said, whether they be the instinctual, the wild emotions, and they go against his instinctual desires, or whether they be the religious emotions, and they go against his superstitious desires. You see? So people that grasp onto certain ideas in the guise of some type, that's not a mammon anymore. The ideal of a mammon is one who always is able to put aside his emotions and follow the truth of Torah as he learns the truth of Torah. We speak about a mammon, we don't just mean a person who believes in God. Everybody today believes in God. But that's not God. What they believe in, that is simply a figment. That's the God of the psyche. They created a psychological God to protect them. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the God of reality. And that's why it becomes much more difficult. You might say it's very easy to be a believer. Because everybody is an idol worshiper as a believer. Right? And you go across. That's not what we're talking about over here. That's easy. See, the type of belief, the person who's in trouble and is worried and scared and turns to his idol to save him, that's not belief. We're talking about reality. We're talking about the God of reality. You know, the God of heaven, Al-Kaya Shemayim. And that is something which is entirely different. The God of Abraham. The God of Abraham was not, he was raised in an idolatrous society and he gave up all that, Abraham. So he gave that up to believe in the God of reality. The creator of heaven and earth, which is an entirely different God. See? And it's an entirely different relationship to God. That requires emunah. That's true emunah. But that's, of course, a whole other sphere to explain the difference. I assume you all, Jackie's point is well taken. I don't have any regard for the person who regards himself as being a religious person. It's not the true God. You see what I'm saying? We're talking about one whose conviction is rooted in reality and truth. And the ordinary person in today's society, the Christian or whatever it may be, who believes he's an idolater, that's not a virtue at all, according to the Torah.